Welcome back, everyone, to MX Asian American. Today we have Samantha. Would you like to introduce yourself first to the listeners?
So I'm Samantha Ong. I live in Toronto and I grew up in Australia, but I was actually born in Malaysia. But I'm now the CEO and founder of Joey Dolls. It's a company that I created that creates diverse Asian dolls for children. And I did so in hope of creating more awareness and education around Asian diversity and just really celebrating our individual cultures.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Samantha, for being on the show. Usually I like to start from the way back when I interview my guests. Could you tell us a little bit about how and where you grew up and how was like young Samantha like?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So yeah, I know I touched on a little bit about like where I grew up and where I was born. So yeah, I was born in Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, but I moved to Australia when I was a baby, like 8 months old, and my dad did so mainly for, for a better life for me. So he found a job over in Australia. I didn't know anyone, and he just pretty much picked up and left, and took me and my mom over. And so basically just the brand new immigrants to Australia. Back in the 80s, 90s, there was really hardly any Asians in Australia. And there really was, I think, this like first like wave of, well, I shouldn't say first, but like it's still very new immigration coming into Australia. So there wasn't really, I'd say, a bit of racism, even my mom faced. And I probably didn't really understand it growing up as a young child, but now looking back, I see all these things that affected me as a child, and then growing up into adulthood. Just things like, not having, being able to see yourself on TV. And even to this day in Australia, you don't really see too many Asians or people that look, look like myself on TV, or even especially in leadership. So I remember even thinking when as a child, like I remember, yeah, vividly thinking, I can't ever be a princess. I can't be an actress. Like, I can't play those main roles, things like that. So I think those sort of thoughts like really affected like where I saw myself in the world, and like how like I really valued myself in the world. And I just thought like I was always meant to be in the sidelines. And so just kind of like, when it came to like your career path and stuff like that, I didn't really have a clear career path like that I wanted. Like I always thought like I would just go along with what was sort of set forward for me, sort of thing. And I also remember thinking like, because I was always playing with like blonde dolls and stuff like that, I always envied my blonde classmates. I remember thinking, wow, they're so lucky to be born that way. They're so pretty. But and then the opposite of that was that I'm not as pretty as them. And that I couldn't find, love or anything or happiness because I was looked like this. And so I remember, yeah, it was just I thought myself more lowly than my classmates.
I see. I could totally see where you're coming from, 'cause like for me it was mostly I grew up in I think I grew up in the southern part of the US in Georgia, and I actually grew up around a lot of diverse like my community was very diverse and like the kids around me were really diverse, but I think for me it was similar to you how I couldn't find a role model in the workplace, or like for me it was most starkly obvious in all my teachers. Like they were all white, like from elementary school all the way to like even high school, right? I probably had like one or two like person of color, people of color teachers. And I totally also get what you're saying about your self-esteem, like as a child, seeing these like conventional beauty standards being all white people and like with blonde hair, things like that. As a child, it's really hard to grasp. And you did mention that you sort of went towards a career path that was like sort of set for you. And what was that? And did you have any idea of like what you wanted to pursue going to high school or college?
Yeah, good question. It's interesting because I think I've always been quite a creative person. Like I remember as a child, I would always be drawing, and I was always attracted to something really creative. I really love creating, and because I was Asian, I think there was this sort of like pressure to go be an accountant, go be a doctor or a lawyer or something. Those traditional career paths, and I just completely didn't see myself doing that. But later in high school, because I performed well, because of that pressure, I thought like if I studied enough, I worked hard, I'll be able to achieve the career path that I wanted. But I didn't really know what I wanted, and I just knew that I had to be, quote unquote, successful. So I remember late high school, I remember dabbling with, the internet was coming in, and it's crazy to think like the internet was coming in, but yeah, it just seems so long ago now. But yeah, the internet was coming, so like I was creating websites, and I was doing that from my own home, and I was really enjoying playing around with Photoshop, just really like creating. And I remember telling my parents I wanted to be a web designer, and they were just like, "Oh, that doesn't seem stable. That what kind of career path is that?" And so it really like shut me down. And even though I loved it so much, I spent all my time doing that. I love like photography. I remember being the only one always taking my camera with me, and I'm always the one photographing everyone. I was always like the girl with the camera, and I was always doing that. So when they like really shut me down, I was like, oh, okay. Because my dad was in IT, so they said, why can't you just be in IT? And because I was pretty good with computers as well, and I think it just like fell into that, I don't know, the mold, that stereotype, oh, Asians are good at, math, or Asians are good at IT. So I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I have to do that. And like even when I dropped chemistry in my last year, one of my teachers was like so disappointed, like, oh, I can't believe you dropped chemistry. But I absolutely hated chemistry. And even those words, like I just like it makes you doubt
Feel
yourself.
that.
What am I doing? So yeah, I in Australia, what you do when you apply for university, you don't just apply for all the universities. You have like a ranking system, so you would rank what courses you wanted to go to, and like I think it was 1 to 10 or something like that. And so it was really all over the place, because I was like, I like imaging, so maybe I could be like a radiologist. And then I was like, oh, but maybe finance is like, would be stable. And I was like, I really don't want to do IT. So I had both of them in there, and just like completely different. And I had no idea. So, and then when it came to the radiology, like I went to a hospital one day, and just for an experience. And I was like, oh, this is not for me. And even on the first, like the application, the first question was, why do you want to be a radiologist? I couldn't even answer that. So I had to take it out, and then I just had commerce, like commerce finance, and then I had with science. So science, I wanted to do math because I was told I was good at it. So that's why I had it in there. And then yeah, so then I followed the path of at the time I was going to be an actuary, and then I really just couldn't stand studying anymore at university, because I think like subconsciously it just really wasn't for me, and I just didn't know it at the time. At the time I just thought I was too lazy, I can't concentrate, like I'm not good at this sort of thing. But I didn't really occur to me that maybe I wasn't good at it, or I couldn't commit to it because I just had no interest. So I ended up like getting out of that, but I majored in finance. And then when I majored in finance, I was like, okay, now what? And then because my dad was in IT, but always been in an insurance company. So I was like, oh, I don't know. I'll just apply in an insurance company. So I ended up in an insurance company. So I just sort of like at the end sort of just drifted to what I thought I had to do, but it wasn't also quite sure. Like it was just really all over the place because I really didn't feel like I didn't really have the ability to like really explore like what I really wanted. Yeah, so that's why I was just so all over the place.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And like it's really, really hard actually for high schoolers to decide what they want to do.
Because
it's like you're 18, you haven't experienced like hardly anything in life, right?
And it's crazy, like when I think about it, they only tell you like certain like the mainstream career paths. No, doctor, accountant, like this mainstream. But now I'm out in the world, it's just there's like thousands of more avenues than just those mainstream.
Exactly.
So yeah. And I
so then you start in.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I just was saying I wish I had known these things and like what it really means to be successful. Because I think in what I was taught, like to be successful, you have work hard, study hard, get a good job, and then you just work at a job, and then that's considered successful. Whereas I have such a different viewpoint on that now.
Yeah, absolutely. So once you start at this insurance company, even like just listening to you talk about it now, you're kind of like, oh, I have to do this because, you know, I have to. What was like sort of your experience and like what made you eventually pivot towards like entrepreneurship?
Yeah. Okay. So I was working in Australia. So in an insurance company, it was a job. So I didn't really realize it, but I had aspirations of being successful. So I wanted to go up the career ladder and get more experience. But where I was at, I just felt like I wasn't really going anywhere. It just felt really stuck. So I didn't realize that it was my career at the time, but I just told my parents, like, I want to go get more experience overseas. So that's sort of how I pitched it to them. And them being Asian and I'm the oldest daughter. So it was really hard for them to let me go overseas, like on the other side of the world. And so at the time, I really wanted to just really go back to finance because I thought, finance is where it's at, like I can make a lot of money. I want to be in New York, like doing finance. So that was my goal at the time. I'm going to get to New York. And so I ended up like it was so hard to get a job in New York because actually it was like right after the 2007, 2008 like financial crisis. So I moved in 2009. So it was a lot of people that were still quite unemployed. Unemployment was really quite high. So it was hard for me. Like even when I moved over so I ended up moving to Canada first because it was easy for me to get like a visa because of the Commonwealth. And so I thought, if I can get to Canada, it's pretty close. I can, try to get job interviews. But at the time, they were telling me, why would we hire a foreigner? There's so many Canadians that were unemployed. So it was really hard. So then I was applying for these banking positions and they're like, you need a credit history and all this to even apply for a bank. And I was like, I was just brand new. So in the end, I ended up back in insurance.
I see.
Because that was where my experience lie. And so I was stuck in insurance again. And I knew I felt really stuck. And I didn't want to be there, but I thought, okay, well, if I do this a little bit longer, I'll get more experience and then maybe I can do something else. But then it ended up in insurance for another, I think it was 8 years.
Oh my gosh.
It was like a total of a decade. I was, yeah. So and then at the end I remember thinking, I can't wake up in the morning to go to work. It's just, I was just completely dreading it. And I remember like getting sick all the time because I think I just like my body was just subconsciously hating it. Yeah. So I was really depressed. And so my husband, what was my boyfriend at the time, he was like, "You really love photography. Why don't you explore that?" And I was thinking, I don't know if I could make money doing photography. It's a hobby. And he was like, "Well, my friend's getting married. Maybe you can ask him." And then I ended up asking him, and he's like, "Yeah, I don't have a photography. I didn't even think of having a photographer. I had like a really low key wedding." So did it for like super cheap, and then just did it. And then I was like, "Oh my gosh, I really love wedding photography. It was so nice to have a purpose in that I could use my creative outlet, but at the same time be able to give something so special to someone." I remember after the wedding, they said, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe I never even thought about having a wedding, but wedding photographer." But now that you've given all these pictures, like I have been able to look back and see all these moments that I didn't even see. For example, one that really struck them the most was when they were having their first dance and the two moms were hugging, and I caught that and they didn't even know that was happening. And so when they saw that, they just cried. And so it was that sort of feedback really opened up my world into wedding photography, because I thought, wow, if I could give that to someone and make them, you know, feel, you know, capture these special memories for people, I can give someone something so special that they can really treasure for a lifetime. And it gave me so much purpose. So I ended up hustling doing that for on the side for I think a couple of years, like maybe two or three years, while I was working full time still, and then making enough money that I was able to quit.
Wow. The way your body just kind of told you that you needed to get out of here. That was crazy. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but it's funny because when I went into that, I never got sick. It's true. Like, I think my body really did feel that I needed to get out.
So, and then you transition into photography, and I love how like sort of your creative hobby sort of manifested itself now. And then your first thought was like, well, it's just a hobby. I don't think I can make money out of it, because I feel like in the Asian community, like that's what our parents like have taught us, right? That we need to have hobbies that are creative, but they can never be career paths, you know, because they're just hobbies. How are you going to make money out of that, right?
Exactly. Like, it's not school, it's not a job. Like, But it's funny because when I went into wedding photography, I felt more secure about my finances than in a job, because when I was in the job, I guess I felt like I wasn't because my heart wasn't fully there. I felt like I wasn't ever able to like give it 100%. So I always felt insecure that they could always let me go because I wasn't performing as well as my peers were. And so but when I went to wedding photography, I always knew that like I'm good at this, so I felt like more control of my circumstances. And so it was interesting that we're taught that having your own business, or even just, you know, the freelance world is insecure, but now looking back, or having been in that position, I felt more secure than I'd ever been, and I made way more money than I made before.
Wow. So you leave the insurance company, and then now you are doing this full time. Are there any like difficulties you face while you were doing the photography business? What were some other rewarding moments that you had?
Yeah, definitely really rewarding, in the sense like, you know, just what I mentioned before, being able to give something so special to someone. So I think I've always been like a people pleaser, I think. And so I think I really let that overtake my entire business without realizing it. I was always wanting to give so much of myself. And because wedding photography was such a service-based business, I allowed all my time to be taken up by this. And because I loved it so much, I forgot, you know, all about what else I loved. And this became my entire life. And so everything that I felt that I was worth was in this business, was doing weddings, was, you know, doing photography, giving my all to everyone. So even though when I quit my corporate job, I thought if I could work for myself, I can give myself time to go to, you know, take a day off, go do more yoga, go enjoy my time and go to the spa, stuff like that, like to be able to treat myself. Instead, it was the complete opposite. Like I was my worst boss because I never allowed myself to stop. And so even though I had a break, if I had a break, I'd be like, I don't know what to do with myself. I guess I'll just go work because I love it, you know? And then because I worked all the time, then it started to brew into like resentment a little bit because I was just completely overworked and I just didn't have a sense of self anymore. So I think that was my difficulty, not being able to really have boundaries and not being able to say no to people because I wanted to be able to be there for everyone.
Do you think that was that kind of not contributed to you also pivoting later into starting Joey Dolls too?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's good that you asked that because when it really forced me to stop was the pandemic. It was 2019. I had my daughter, my first baby. And even with a baby, I didn't know how to stop. I had her. And then I went straight back into weddings. Like, you know how you're supposed to have like 30-day confinement period? Yeah. I literally took that to heart and it was literally 30 days. And after 30, I think it was 3 or 4 days in a row, like back-to-back weddings. And it was I know, it was like insane. And I was in so much pain and my body was recovering so much. And just like, you know, being sleep deprived and all of that. It was just, it was a lot. And I didn't really realize that, like how much I had taken on for myself at the time. But because with weddings, I committed myself to someone. So I felt so bad to be able to like, okay, now I'm pregnant. I'm going to cancel on you. I didn't want to do that to people. So I just, because I was committed to all these weddings, I felt like I had the obligation to fulfill all of them. And I thought I could. And I think that really sent me down like a really dark spiral because it was just so hard. You know, navigating motherhood for the first time, you know, my husband and I worked together. He was actually at home, so it was really good. But like, just navigating parenthood together, like I was really, I think, suffering from postpartum depression with, you know, the lack of sleep and having to work. I remember us like waking up at 4 a.m. feeding my daughter and still like, I remember dictating emails to him to be able to, it was ridiculous. And I think that like I was overworked before that, but then 2019 when I had her, it was really bad for me. And so when 2020 came around, because of the pandemic, I had no choice to not work because we were all in lockdown. And so at the time, as I mentioned to you before, I really felt like my business was really my business so much that it was my self-worth. So if I was, my business was doing well, then I felt good about myself. So because that was taken away from me and like weddings were being canceled left, right, and center or postponed, like there was so much uncertainty. I remember just lying around going, what do I do? Like, who am I? And I didn't know when I could go back to doing weddings because no one knew when we would be back. Because, you know, weddings are planned so far in advance. So people didn't want to take that risk and was really into the following year. So that whole 2020, all my contracts were all pretty much gone. And so, and then even when 2021 rolled around, they again postponed and canceled or, you know, downsized their wedding. So it was again, yeah, so I pretty much couldn't work for those 2 years as well as I could before. And also in 2021, I was pregnant with my second daughter. And so I didn't want to get sick. And so I had my husband take on a lot. And so it was really those 2 years where I was able to really slow down, reprioritize my life because I was forced to. But, you know, I was staying home with my daughter, realizing the importance of being home with her. Because even before when I had her, I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like, why does she need me so much? Like, I need to work. And it was just, yeah, like looking back and thinking about my attitude about that, it's just so crazy. Because I was able to spend all this time with her, I really valued that time alone together. And I was just thinking, like, I can't do weddings forever. I really do want to be spent, like, I had kids to be with them. And I really wanted to be a present mom. So so that's when I was like, what do I do? And I don't know. And that's when, you know, the rise in anti-Asian hate was happening. I was just really watching the news and just, it made me really scared for the world that she would grow up in. I was just thinking, like, what's going to happen? Like, all I remember thinking is that I want her to feel proud about how she looks, who she is, where she comes from, her culture. Because I remember even thinking when I was young, like I remember telling my dad, like, speak English and all this stuff. Like, you know, I didn't feel so proud to be Asian because we were in lockdown. You know, she couldn't play with other children. So I started looking for dolls out there. And I really wanted her to have a doll that looked like her. So she, you know, changed that narrative that I had. And then looking at the dolls out there, I was just like, oh, it wasn't anything that I really connected with and that I felt like good, like comfortable for her to play with. And yeah, I felt really frustrated. And that's when my husband again was like, well, what if you're having so much trouble looking for dolls out there, why don't you make them? And I was like, oh, I never thought about it that way. It's funny. He always puts these ideas in my head. So they're good ideas. And so that's when I was like, oh, why don't I make them? If there's no dolls out there that I liked, why don't I make one that I would like? And at the time I was thinking, because she was nearly like around one years old at the time, and at 1 year old we would put her in her like Chinese outfit and her Korean outfit, I thought I wanted her to be able to see that in a doll, and I couldn't find that in dolls. And I was just thinking, why don't dolls really celebrate culture that way? Like, why are all the dolls, the ones that I saw were just, you know, fair skinned, dark hair, and then they were somehow Asian. I really wanted the dolls to really celebrate Asian culture. And so that's when I came up with the idea of doing the traditional dresses. And that's when it all started brewing in my mind to be able to do this and be able to do this for her and other children and really change that narrative for generations.
No, yeah. I love that. And I'm glad you got the 2 years of the pandemic to sort of find yourself and figure out your other hobbies and like reprioritize. And I love the mission behind Joey Dolls and to change the narrative. And I know like the doll industry just recently started diversifying, right? Probably in the past 5 years or so, which is crazy to me. And I'm wondering, like, you know, you're doing this mostly for your daughters, and how would you think that you would have grown up differently if you had like these dolls to represent yourself while you were growing up?
Yeah, I definitely think it would make a difference, because when I was looking for dolls, I came across like so many articles about how much young children really see racial differences at such a young age, and that these sort of narratives are really built from such a young age. Like, I had no idea that it was actually that young. And so being able to see myself reflected, my doll play through, hopefully, you know, and media is getting a lot better now. I really think that being able to see yourself valued in society makes such a difference. Like, all I want for my children and for other children is to know that, you know, they can be whoever they want. They are good. They're amazing just as they are. They can achieve anything that they want. I felt so like limited to those ideas of what an Asian girl should be. I remember, like, you know, you can't speak up, or I can only be in these sort of career paths. I had to be good at math, you know, all those like sort of stereotypes that we say are wrong with stereotype, yet I'm following those molds. I really want the future generation to feel proud of where they come from, to really embrace their culture. And, you know, I think about culture in the sense that it really is passed down from like generation to generation. And I just, I think like now as an adult, like I realize how beautiful and wonderful our culture is. It's just, there's so much beauty in it, and I just don't want it to be lost. And I think being able to really embrace and feel proud of our culture from generation to generation is so important, to be able to, yeah, celebrate all these, the world is so diverse, and because it's so diverse, that is why it's so beautiful, and it's so interesting. It makes us all so interesting and unique and special. That's why I think it's so important.
Yeah, definitely wholeheartedly agree with that. But now the real question is, how did your daughter react when you made your first doll for her?
Yeah, good question. So at the time, I was designing them on the computer, like getting them, like getting the face right and all of that. And she couldn't really speak at the time. And I remember every time I would pull up the images, she would giggle and laugh and point at the screen. And she wouldn't normally do that otherwise. Yeah, she was so interested in what I was doing. And I remember when I gave them to her, she, I had more dolls than I do right now, because I was just playing around with, you know, different ideas. And so I think we had something like 9, something like that. And when she got them, there was just so many of them, and we laid them out, and she just wanted to like jump on them and play with them. And that's really why I wanted to do like a plush doll, a rag doll, because I really wanted young children to be able to play with them, be able to snuggle with them from a young age. And and even when like now she's much older, so I've gone through like so many prototypes and so many versions. And like even recently when I made the new version, I made the Korean doll. It was inspired off my daughter's hanbok, and so both of my daughters used the same hanbok. And so recently she wore the hanbok for her first birthday. And so when she, my oldest daughter saw the doll, she said, "Oh my gosh, that looks like Jasmine, my youngest daughter." And I thought, yes, like that's exactly why I created these dolls, so that she can really see herself or even her sister in these dolls. And then another time, she picked up the doll, and I didn't prompt her on this at all, but she picked up the doll and she said, "She's a princess." And I thought, oh my gosh, like that's completely like that narrative change that I wanted. Because as I mentioned before, I told you that I never thought that I could be a princess. And I never thought I could be, you know, someone like that was like valued or special or whatever you want to call it. But the fact that she called the Korean doll a princess, and then she also actually read it to her sister, I think that is just proves exactly why these dolls are so meaningful. And I really hope that these sort of stories can, will happen with other children, that they will see themselves or, you know, their siblings or their Asian friends. And I really do hope that these dolls aren't just for Asian children. I really hope that these are for all children to be able to embrace all cultures. And so it's also interesting because I created these dolls and I wanted them to have diverse skin tones as well. And actually at the very beginning, I wanted each culture to have options for skin tones, but unfortunately with like mass production, it's like really difficult to do, but it's still like my goal to do. But I still have three different skin tone options for the collection. And so it was important to me because like even, you know, Asian beauty standards, like the whole idea of like that Asian pearl skin and the skin. So, and I remember even when I was pregnant, my husband's Korean, so he has a fairer skin than me. Like I was told that, oh, I hope your daughter has big eyes like you and fair skin like my husband. I thought, oh my gosh, like this whole like idea of like the focus on our eyes and our skin is just like, I want children to feel proud of who they are and how they look no matter what, And so that's why I created these dolls with these joyful faces, these different skin tones, so that we can really see and embrace different skin tones. And my daughter, whenever I ask her, which is your favorite? She always picks up the Filipina doll and the Indian doll. Of course, like she picks up the Korean doll too, but she always picks up the Filipina and the Indian doll, which are the darker skin tones. And I think that's so interesting that from a young age, she does see those tones and she loves them. And so I really hope that, this idea of wanting like fair skin, we can change that narrative on it, that ideal beauty standard.
No, I think it's super amazing and also heartwarming to hear the stories of how your daughters reacted to the dolls. We're heading on to the last question or so. Just wondering how you're doing with work-life balance, especially taking care of your two daughters right now, while also, doing all the stuff for Joey Dolls.
Yeah, because I'm still running my photography business, managing it, as well as doing Joey Dolls and the two kids. And also, like my youngest is full-time at home with me, and my oldest is only in like part-time school. She's only in school for 3 hours a day, so I still have her for the rest of the day, which is still a lot. It's a lot to manage, and I still am working on the whole boundaries and I think I'm a lot better when it comes to work, being able to say no to things and not taking on, but still when it comes to work with my children, it's still been really difficult. right now I pretty much am only able to work when they sleep or they take a nap or when they go to bed at night. So right now, like after 9:30 is like when I'm able to work, and I go to bed pretty late, like sometimes 1 or 2, and I'm trying to get better at that because the kids wake up at sometimes 6, sometimes 7, sometimes and so yeah, being able to do this like every day is just, it's not good for my health, and it's not, I'm not able to be the best mom, the best, like I'm not able to function properly. So I am trying to get better at this, and I'm hoping that soon my daughter will be in full-time school as well. That will help a lot, but I still have my youngest daughter at home all day. I do have to find ways that I can manage this better, like without going crazy. So I don't have this down pat right now, but I'm just doing the best that I can. And I will say I do have a really good husband that is able to step in where he can. Like he's taken over my photography business a lot more, and so I don't have to do too much, but still being able to manage, like getting the Joey Dolls off the ground, doing all this on my own has been a lot. Especially because I make it my priority to respond to every message, every comment, because I really do believe in community, that our community has been so supportive of the mission and how much they love the dolls and what it means for them. And I really am doing this for them, and I really want them to know that this it is for them. And I yes, I'm working all the time, but I think this work is so important, and I hope after all of it, like once this gets going, I really do hope that I can set this example for, you know, my children or others, that like, you know, the career path isn't like so straightforward. And I actually, looking back, I'm actually glad that I went this really windy road in being in insurance or business and then going into photography and then doing this, because each path has taught me so much. And I think I really needed to go through those paths to be able to get to where I am now, because if I didn't know anything about business, I wouldn't have started my photography business. And if I didn't know anything about starting a business, I wouldn't have been able to do this. So I do feel like this is my mission, but, and it took me a long time to get here, but I think it was all for a reason. And I'm glad that I'm able to use everything that I've learned over the last, in my work, to be able to do this now.
Yeah, totally. I like, after having interviewed so many people, I totally see what you're saying. Basically, like every experience you've ever had before has led you to this moment, right? So all those other previous jobs and the windy road, what was meant to happen. And yeah, I love ending on this note. Thank you so much, Samantha, for coming on the show. Can listeners find you and find Joey Dolls?
Yeah, so you can jump on at www.joeydolls.com. That's our website. And then on Instagram, just Joey Dolls. I have a TikTok. I don't really use it too much, but it's Joey Dolls Co. And then there's Facebook as well. It's just Joey Dolls. But yeah, thank you so much for having me and talking about my experience and how I started at Joey Dolls. I'm really happy to be able to be here and share this with all of you.
Awesome.